On this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast, we're joined by the one, the only, the inimitable, Scott Rifen of My Star Wars Story. We're here to talk all about Season of the Force at Disney, Darth Vader rumors, and much more on this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. Stay tuned for a great episode, and we can't wait to get started right now.
Falcon flight with destiny.
It's the Star Wars Report podcast. Everybody, welcome, welcome. Come in. One, all. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Please delete as appropriate. I'm Riley Blanton, your host for this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. You've come to the right place if you're a fan of that galaxy far, far away. I'm very excited to welcome to the program my good friend and yours. He's a big fan of all things Star Wars. It's Mr. Mark Earleman.
Did somebody say Star Wars? Because I'm ready to talk some Star Wars. I don't know about you guys out there.
Absolutely, man. It's another night. It's another Sunday evening here in Fayetteville, Georgia. And we're here to talk all about that galaxy far, far away. And it's another big week of Star Wars news. In fact, I'll tell you what, Mark. It's getting towards that time of year where it's just going to keep coming more fast and more furious. To cross franchises. but here to talk about that and much more is the host of My Star Wars Story, radio personality extraordinaire, and my good friend. It's Mr. Scott Rifen, everybody.
Hi, young people. How are you today?
It's
good to have you here. And I got to change my diaper. I'll be right back.
So Scott was kind of hoodwinked into the show today, because I shoot him a text and I'm like, hey Scott, would you like to guest host for this week's episode? And he's like, sure. And I'm like, yeah, we're gonna talk about the Disney thing and we're gonna talk about the Darth Vader rumors and all that good stuff. And then I kind of casually mentioned and all that great Chicago Tribune piece about middle aged Star Wars fans.
And then it all became perfectly clear to me why I was being invited. It's almost like dinner for schmucks.
The dominoes have lined up.
Exactly. And now they tumble. I'm super excited for the show, guys. I just want to give a huge shout out, as always, and a huge thank you right at the top of the show to our patrons over at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. The Patreon update, which is kind of, I realized the beginning of the show is we've got our own segment now, Mark. The Patreon update for this week is yesterday. I just finally uploaded the audio that Michael Morris put together of the full panel, as best as we could get it all together, of Peter Mayhew. And I also, Mark, got nice. The official photographs from the Dragon Con photographer, and I will be posting those very soon on the Star Wars Report Facebook page. But yeah, if you're a patron, that's where you can find, log into the account, and you'll see the audio, the full audio from the Dragon Con panel where I interview Peter Mayhew and put a giant medal on upon his majestic neck. And it was an amazing experience, and I'll never forget it. And so you can relive that and do so by supporting the show at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Also, another quick announcement. Bethany and I were recently on the 602 Club podcast from Trek FM. Yes, that's right. We crossed over, but not to talk about Star Trek. It's the 602 Club is evidently... I don't know much about this Star Trek thing, but isn't that like... That's an actual in-universe cantina, so to speak, in the world of Star Trek.
I believe it's an officers' club at Starfleet.
Well, there we go. So something along those lines. Close enough. That's Riley Star Trek.
Or that could actually also be the new name of 10 Forward, because I do know also on the new Enterprise they gave it another name.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Actually, that is what it is. The 602 Club is what they call it. That's the 10 Forward now on the new Enterprise E. That's right. I remember reading that in a book.
If only there were a website we could go to and type these things in and find out
Oh, but it's not as fun as how close does Mark get? It's like a big dartboard.
I don't know, but that's pretty good, Mark. Considering that's off the top of your head, that's not bad. That's actually pretty admirable. But it's forget about what it is in universe. It is also a great podcast hosted by Matt Rushing, and we did a Star Wars commentary, not like a film commentary, but a newspaper style column commentary, just in audio form, where we talked all about the original film that kicked it all going, kicked it all off. And it was great. We discovered the true hero of Star Wars, and nigh really the whole saga, the person single-handedly responsible for bringing balance to the Force and light out of the darkness. No, it wasn't Anakin Skywalker. It wasn't Luke Skywalker, Han Solo. It was Aunt Beru. And you can find out why by going to the 602 Club and downloading the latest episode where Bethany and I appear on it. See, there's a radio tease for you, Scott. That's how the very professionals nice. Do it.
What's in this blue milk, man? It's freaking vodka, man.
So something else that I recently discovered during this time is... I love to do at the beginning. This is where everyone's tuned in. So I'm going to bring it up again at the top of the show. I discovered an amazing film, fan film. Well, it's not really, it's an educational quote unquote fan film. If you can call it that, educational in terms of that's why it's still on the internet, because it has educational purposes. We promise it's not just for entertainment purposes. And that is, it's called The Mentor, and it is this this edit of the Star Wars film, specifically A New Hope, that follows it in a very Quentin Tarantino style flashbacks, where it follows Obi-Wan's story throughout A New Hope and tells the story of Obi-Wan and his friendship with Anakin and Anakin's fall in a series of really well edited flashbacks, particularly the last few minutes of the film, where it's just it's amazing. It's just the duel of Vader and Obi-Wan in A New Hope, intercut with the duel of Anakin Skywalker, I guess Darth Vader in Revenge of the Sith, and Obi-Wan, and the subsequent burning in ash and the tragedy of Revenge of the Sith intercut with that moment. It's so good. There's even a moment at the end, and again, this is not, I can never do it as good of justice, but there's even a moment at the end where it's cut back to Padme in the birthing chamber, and she says, "Luke," and it cuts to a shot of Luke Skywalker looking into the sunset, and then she says, "Leia," and it cuts to Obi-Wan's look of recognition when he first sees the hologram of Leia in the beginning of A New Hope. And it's just so well edited together. It's something that you should definitely check out. It will be in the show notes. It's called The Mentor. And that's recommendation courtesy of your friendly neighborhood Star Wars Report podcast. But let's talk about old people. Scott?
I'm sorry. I had to be woken up. What? I was taking a nap.
So full disclosure, I have the subject, one of the main subjects of this amazing Chicago Tribune piece, which is entitled, I want to get the actual title correct, for Star Wars. Oopsie, it's such a long article, I have to scroll way back to the top. This isn't like a 300 word, top five moments of
feature.
Yeah, this is true journalism. I met the gentleman who wrote this at Star Wars Celebration, but that's another story. The title is "For Star Wars Fans in Middle Age, Force is Still Strong." You could have just said "The Force is Still Strong" and it would have been a complete sentence.
Yeah.
Is it like, is yes. that a rule of newspapers that it can't be a complete sentence?
That's headline-ese where they go, "You don't need the article. Just drop the article out."
I guess.
The A, N, and D very seldom show up in those things.
I guess. But point being is that it's a really well done, I would describe it as a think piece that kind of explores, I think, what we know as the Star Wars community, the world of podcasting and blogging, that really hardcore community of fans that have been with the saga for years now, and the 501st, and the, you know, Chronicles 501st members, R2 builders. Mm-hmm. The article kind of has a really unique look at what Star Wars means to this generation. And I really, really enjoyed it. There's really no way to comprehensively cover it. But again, we'll have the article in the show notes. And I have Jimmy Mack himself will be on next week's show. As long as Lord willing and the creek don't rise, as we say in the South.
And we do say that.
We do say that. A very small percentage. Well, I don't know. I'd be interested in the actual percentage. Shoot us an email, starwarsreport@gmail.com, if you were prior familiar with the term Lord willing and the creek don't rise. It's like the first time we moved back to the States after 2 or 3 years in Atlanta. We moved up to Dayton, Tennessee, home of the Scopes trial. And I had a neighbor that said Ewens, and that floored me growing up. I'd never heard that before. But that's an aside. Back to old people. I think what I really liked was the way that he really explores and touches on what it means to be a Star Wars fan to the degree that these people have been able to express their fandom as a sort of almost idyllic version of what you would want as a kid. You're like, I'm going to be able to dress up as a stormtrooper when I'm an adult. And now people can actually do that. But Scott, what was your take on the article as a representative old person?
I was appreciative of the article because it didn't, I was afraid it would be a little mocking in its tone, and it really wasn't. It was almost envious. We had this thing that we were part of for so long. And a lot of guys don't understand it. When I talk to people and you and I, Riley, I think have had this exact conversation sitting over a barbecue at Twin Oaks. There was a world before Star Wars, and there was a world after Star Wars. And there are those of us who remember that world before and remember how nothing was ever the same after that. And that's the biggest impact that it had on people my age and my generation, was just everything changed at that moment. And it's really hard to describe because it's one of those generational things that we experienced that nobody else did. But the entire world was very different permanently from that point forward.
It is. And the article also captured something that I tend to think about, and I think you mentioned it briefly, but this the almost envious nature where he talks about the creative passion behind a generation that grew up with Star Wars. And that was born out of a love of Star Wars. And that, to me, I thought was one of the more interesting aspects of the article, because it's interesting because he highlights at the end of the article a moment where they were roaming the floor of Celebration. And what's funny is I was in that posse. And I'd actually met the journalist briefly. I'm like, oh, Chicago Tribune, cool. But at the very end, he is respectful in a way of the passion that Star Wars has given so many folks. But at the end, when there's a fellow who asked Jimmy, like, great trailer, it's like a 9/11 moment. And he ends the article saying Mack and Swank grimaced at the comparison and the lack of perspective. And I thought it was kind of interesting where he kind of captured in a really honest way what Star Wars is and isn't. I don't know. It's hard to put my finger on exactly.
No, I noticed that as well in the article. It just and it was actually kind of out of step with the rest of the article, but at the same time, look, Star Wars, for all it has done for us, for all it has affected us, for all it's impacted us, and for all the time we've spent on it, it ain't 9/11.
Yes.
It ain't Pearl Harbor. You know, it changed the world, but in a very different way than that. It wasn't a tragedy. It wasn't a disaster. And, you know, it's not the Kennedy assassination. It shouldn't be viewed that way.
Yeah, that is a little morbid comparison. I like the fact that it talks about it being multi-generational. And, you know, Riley, we were talking beforehand how I came into it kind of in the second generation. I mean, I was there, just born shy of the first generation, grew up watching and knowing that they were there, but not really getting into it until around 97. And, you know, when I got in, it was kind of like putting my toe in the water kind of thing. Like, I didn't really get into Star Wars until I got into the fandom side of things as well. Once that happened, it was like a whole nother universe. It was like there was this curtain was pulled back and everything was in color. It was no longer black and white. And there was this whole other world out there called the expanded universe and everything. But then I'm watching my kids, you know, because I've been such a diehard, dyed-in-the-wool Star Wars fans, you know, all my kids grew up watching it right out the get-go. There was no, you remember the time you watched it for the first time? No, I've robbed them of that. They're never going to remember their first time because they've been watching it straight out the womb. So like my daughter, like my little daughter, Jaina, right now, everything is Star Wars Rebels. It doesn't matter if it's A New Hope or if it's the Clone Wars or if it's The Force Unleashed. Daddy, Star Wars Rebels. She just thinks that's the term for Star Wars. And, you know, we were talking about this because my son was the Clone Wars kid. You know, I was still kind of like, oh, it's treading over my EU. And my son was loving it. So I'm like, well, I got to love it because he's loving it and this is fun. And that was his Star Wars, you know, and I enjoyed the ride because it was still Star Wars to me, but that was definitely his Star Wars. And when we moved from that, you know, he was a little, for lack of a better term, he was a little butthurt, you know, and then Rebels came and he realized the same thing that most fans realize once they give a taste of the new stuff is that the flavor may change, but the ride's always the same. And, you know, each new generation discovers that ride and there's new elements to it. Do you got one loop, two loops? It doesn't matter. You're having fun. And I think that's the thing that you need to remember. And that's what this thing talks about. I love the part where they're talking about Jimmy Mack's kid, Dylan, and Dylan's like, right. I used to think everyone's dad had a Star Wars room. And that's my kid in a nutshell. I mean, I just brought a coworker over the other day and he was flipping out. Like he knew I was into Star Wars and he's like, we got to go see The Force Unleashed, you know, The Force Awakens together. We got to do this, you know, getting all excited. And I'm like, well, here, check out my Star Wars room. And I was showing him pictures of it. And he's just like, oh my gosh. I'm like, yeah, we'll go to my house after work. And we came here. And he was chin hanging down, you know, and like I was telling you, Riley, before, I'm like, this article tells me I'm really close myself to being on something like this because I'm getting that age where, you know, I've been around long enough to see enough stuff, have enough collection and stuff. And it's cool when you run across other people that are as invested, because from where I'm living, you know, I'm kind of considered a freak for this, even though I accept it. But it's nice to be around other people that are like, yeah, let that freak flag fly, baby.
But, you know, it's funny because you never know where you're going to find one of these guys. A couple of buddies of mine, a couple of my Star Wars buddies, a few months ago, well, it's probably been a year now, met this guy named Thomas, who has always lived in this town where I have always lived. He doesn't have a Star Wars room. He has two small Star Wars houses in his backyard. And a great guy, super nice guy. How in the world? We've shopped the same places. We've been to the same Midnight Madnesses. Never ran into each other until about 10, 11 months ago. And all of a sudden, you know, if I could back you up for a second, Mark, one of the things I found interesting was you said you didn't really go whole hog until you got really kind of into the community. And that's one of those things that I think is more of a second generation thing. And I think Star Wars fandom is better and stronger for it. You know, I was with the first generation and we all loved it and we all played Star Wars together. But when it went away, the dark times, as we call it, I was still there and nothing really backed off, but I was perfectly content to be the one Star Wars guy out there. So I thought, and I was okay with it. And with the internet, it's really come this whole community thing. And you brought me back to memories of Celebration 6 where my son and I went together. He had just turned 15, and this was kind of one of those, you know, eventually the teenagers don't want to be around their parents ever again at all anymore. And I knew that this was going to be one of those last chances for us to share. And we got there, and it was nothing but community. And from that one experience, I've met so many friends who are dear friends now. The community aspect of it has really been something you guys brought to the table. We're kind of along for the ride. People like Jimmy are leading the charge, but really you guys are the ones who made this happen.
Yeah, it's been an interesting one. I still remember going to the official sites, forum boards and stuff. And back in the day when like Karen Travis was going there all the time, and I created a thread called Ask Karen, because I contacted her through emails and stuff. And she was like, yeah, you know, like if they'll let you do it, I'll come on there and answer whatever questions. And, you know, she was really That's engaging. Great. And then John Jackson Miller was really engaging. A lot of these authors, James Luceno would come on there and stuff, and they'd start chatting with you. And I mean, you'd just be freaking out because like the purple VIPs would be talking to you. You're like, oh my God, this is so cool. And that was just an angle that was so much fun. And I remember when the site revamped and the forums went away, that feeling of panic and that feeling of where's this community going to go? And, you know, a lot of different websites created forums and stuff to kind of mimic that feel, to give places, you know, people their own homes and stuff. And a lot of people migrated over to Facebook because that was when StarWars.com created their little book, little spot over there and stuff. They're like, oh, you can come over here and follow our Facebook page. And it kind of started to make that shift to the social media aspect of it. And it's evolved in a sense as well, because like, on Twitter, you see a lot of people that have a lot of one-on-one reactions with a lot of the higher ups in Lucasfilm and stuff like that. And some people have that same in Facebook, you know, where they kept those relations live. Cause for a long time, like me and Nathan Butler would contact Leland Chi about certain things on the forums and stuff. And as that progressively changed and as Disney took over and stuff, even Leland had to send out an email to Nate going, you know, I can no longer talk to you guys about continuity things. And it was like, it was weird because things were changing and evolving. And yet, from the fan side of thing, our love, our passion, it never changed. It was just how we went about interacting with each other that changed. So it evolved as we went along. It was a really interesting process.
Yeah, well, I can take you back even further. I mean, I remember being on a chat with Steve Sansweet on CompuServe and mentioning to him a CD that I'd found that he didn't know about. So, yeah, that was the first thing I did when I got online. You know, you can edit this as appropriate, Riley, but I was talking to some buddies of mine the other day. I was like, what's the first thing you look for on the internet when you first got out of there? One of porn. And I kind of went, oh, Star Wars. So when I got on CompuServe, that was the first thing I did, is I went and I found the Star Wars forum and hung out there all day, every day.
No, yeah. Nice. That's amazing. That is incredible, because it is, the medium's changed a lot, but over time, the community has only gotten, like I say, more robust, and it's sort of afforded fans of any age that opportunity to express themselves in ways that just never were the case before, even remotely. And it's interesting because, like, right at the beginning of the article, it talks about in the 90s how the original films were re-released, and then of course the new trilogy was announced, and Jimmy, according to the article, which it's so funny because being friends with him, it's funny to see it from like a third person angle. But yeah, Jimmy caught the fever, and the internet was there to organize the rest of fandom. Quote, toss in a millennial culture that never met an aesthetic it didn't like to keep around, and now you have Star Wars in 2015, which of course he then lists just all of the options we have in the buffet of Star Wars. And even today, he quotes Trisha Barr, you know, another good friend of the program, and how, you know, fandoms now, way more women are participating actively in fandom. And it just keeps growing and growing to a level that, it's interesting to see where it goes. Cause we had, of course, J.C. Reifenberg on the program last week, and he kind of cautioned some of the, I guess, perhaps more commercial elements that could come bite us in the butt, so to speak, depending on if we're not careful to be guardians of the community that was built. Because before, my experience with the Star Wars community, and of course this is kind of what colors my impression of it, but my experience with the Star Wars community is right after Revenge of the Sith coming out, was around the first time I started getting online and finding Star Wars websites and fan sites. And shortly later, you know, 2007, 2008, discovering podcasts. So for me, the community and my fandom became much more active and robust after the films had ended.
And all it was of because which we'll hear this week on your Star Wars story.
Well, that's true. This is true. Coming up.
Well, it's almost like you came in at the golden age of the prequel era, though.
Not really, because it was. Well, I guess my point, Mark, is more it was right as the prequels were ending, but I think fandom almost had this sense of responsibility that we're carrying the torch ourselves. And mm-hmm. so now with the deluge of Star Wars material, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, the community progresses. And if we're just going to get a lot wider and not any deeper, or if we're going to get deeper and wide.
See, I think anyone that came in at the end of Revenge of the Sith, they're kind of the golden age of the prequels, because like a lot of people felt like The Phantom Menace was kind of a letdown. And then a lot of them felt like Attack of the Clones wasn't as good as it could have been. But almost everybody really enjoyed Revenge of the Sith. You know, so it was the crowning achievement of the prequels was the way that that came together. Like even the people that didn't really care for the first two were like, well, the third one was good, though.
Yeah, no, it is. It makes a big difference. It absolutely makes a big difference. But, I have to restart Mixler broadcast.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's, gotta get that rolling. Da-da-da-da. And no, I do not want to publish the show to the show reel. But there it is. I guess we'll just have to ask Jimmy some of these very same questions.
Well, and one of the things I really appreciated about that article was they actually showed us the closet. Because I've heard so much about the closet.
This is true.
And immediately, once I figured out that was the closet, I took it to my wife and said, see that? That's what we're doing. Right there.
Nice.
And the reaction was?
You got a room for that.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Like, and we're taking the wall down and moving it out 12 more feet. You said I had a room for it. You said nothing about expansion, dear.
Exactly. So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. We'll just have to further explore the topic. Again, make sure you're reading the article. It's in the show notes, and we'll be talking to Jimmy in greater detail on next week's show.
We have something to report.
Some treasure. I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
You can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
It's time for some news here on the Star Wars Report podcast, and let's get right into it. It's the story that won't die. It's the original theatrical cuts of the film. Are they going to be released? ? This rumor comes from I picked it up on Making Star Wars, which is where I first saw it. But Empire Magazine tweeted out that John Landis, of course, well-known director and contemporary of George Lucas, dropped the bomb that Disney is finally going to re-release the theatrical cuts of the film. I don't have the audio cued, but if you listen to it, it's pretty convincing. The problem with it is I don't
All right.
see a possible way for them to do work out that deal with Fox.
I've got something else on that too, but I'm going to let Mark.
No, I was just going to say it's the same thing we've heard for some time. Let's start with Mark, your reaction and your thoughts on the matter, on the story, the rumor that won't die.
My thought on it in general now is if they can give us just what we got in the, 97 Blu-ray, that version on a DVD, on a Blu-ray, I think we'll be okay. Because there's a question of which theatrical version for one, because there were slight changes and variations to which theater was playing which based on the equipment at the theater and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And then there's all those rights deals. That's going to be a big hurdle. Granted, Disney, if anyone's got a chance to throw enough money at that, well, it's probably them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Scott?
Yo, I find this story very hard to believe. It is the same story that we've seen over and over and over again. This time they added the credibility, the gravitas of John Landis to this story. And here's why I don't believe it. Because who's John Landis' source?
Everyone's assuming George Lucas.
Well, that's what they say. Yeah, I'm talking to George, and George says, yeah, they're getting ready to do this. What does George Lucas know at this point? He doesn't even know what's happening in the new movie.
No, yeah, George Lucas is no longer the guy that is the man that you want to answer these sorts of things.
He's the last guy who's going to know when they're going to put out the original theatrical cut on Blu-ray. I find it very hard. I'm not doubting that he said it to John Landis, but he probably read that same dad-blamed article that keeps showing up over and over again. Yeah, they're going to put the original one out. Stupid idiots. He doesn't even want the original theatrical cuts out, so I doubt he'd be helping them.
Well, and what is I don't know what the actual story here is, and if there's actual fact out there, if people are just speculating about it. But isn't it commonly assumed, at least in the community, that it was the original theatrical cuts that were used to splice together the 97 special editions, and there aren't any theatrical, at least usable theatrical reels left? At least that's what I understood.
I would be willing to bet that a few kids with a few million dollars, I mean, you've seen all these internet editions of Star Wars,
yeah,
and how cleaned up and how great some of them look. I would be willing to bet with sticking a few million dollars down that pipe, they could probably assemble a good looking old school cut of Star Wars. I don't think that's the issue. I don't know that Disney has any reason to.
Yeah.
Particularly when they don't own that first film.
The DVD, the 2004 DVD was the one that had the Laserdisc version, correct?
Yep. Yep.
Which was, what year would that have been released, like roughly, the Laserdisc?
Oh, good grief. It would have been early 90s. I was in college when the Laserdisc was out, so it might have been late 80s. Because I actually had my VHS tapes. I had Letterbox VHS tapes before anybody else did, and it was because a buddy of mine had the Laserdiscs. And he made me copies of them. So it would have been late 80s, early 90s, because I was in school from 88 to 92. And by 92, they put out the Letterbox, Fox, maybe 93, Fox put out that Letterbox edition themselves. But before then, there wasn't one. So it was definitely around between 88 and 92.
Okay, gotcha. So the Laserdisc, I've actually never popped it in. I've got the DVDs right in front of me, but I'm assuming it's that Letterbox edition.
It is. It seems to be. Yeah. I mean, the only difference is I think there's no episode four on episode four.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. Okay, because that's one thing that boggled my mind. Because how different would the Laserdisc edition be from the theatrical release? It can't be that different.
No, I mean, you know, some lines here and there, some sound mixes mostly. I don't remember. There's one of my favorite screw ups in the original film is. I told you she would never consciously betray the rebellion, Vader says, sits there, and then starts wagging his finger. And that's been cut out of some versions, but not others, but it always tickled me because it's just such a bad mistake. But, you know, little tiny things, not much other than that, I would think.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, we will watch the story with great interest. But I think yeah. I kind of side with you, Scott. I really don't see it happening anytime soon. But it's far more likely now than I would have thought before. I will say that.
I think you'll see the same story again with a new source in 4 months.
Yep. And we'll be talking about it right here on the Star Wars Report podcast. Disney, Season of the Force, they have unveiled a new Star Wars Festival of sorts. A new lineup of rides, shows, and exhibits at Disneyland. Boo.
Now, some of this will be at Disney World as well.
That's true. What I'm looking at, I've got an LA Times story that talks about the long and steady drumbeat, as they say. Come on, LA Times. Good grief. See, this is what ticks me off is that the ad blocker on the iOS store that they released, which was like historic, and then the guy pulled it down. But all these giant long columns from Business Insider talking about how ad blockers on mobile devices will kill their industry. I'm like, how many times have you been browsing the web on your phone and a website ad has like a tricky JavaScript running that hijacks what you click and then it pulls up the app store? And I'm like, for the love of Pete, for the love of all that's holy, I do not want to download Clash of Clans. Now let me read my website. Okay, there's the brief aside. This is not the Riley Rants About Technology podcast. This is the Disney Unveil Star Wars Festival. All right, take a deep breath. Sorry about that, gentlemen. Actually,
I got Disney fans, though, friends, that were immediately irritated. Like, I don't think they've read the articles all the way through. I'm like, wait, most of these things are coming back. It's for construction access. Like, one friend was mad because Thunder Mountain Barbecue is not coming back.
Big Thunder Ranch is.
Yeah, that's one. And they go there, their family of four or five, and they spend $100, all you can eat food, and it's their family tradition. So I get why she's upset about that. But like I told her, I'm like, I think that that's probably the only one that's being cut out so they can have like access into the other park. Cause she's like, well, they need to make it its own park. And I'm like, no, they pretty much said it's going to be its own park and it's going to be separate. They just need to make the access way in. I'm betting they're doing that so they're not shutting down any of the Anaheim local streets around the park. So they keep it all within the borders of the park. So the construction's not stopping traffic and causing a bunch of hardships for the rest of downtown Anaheim.
Yeah, so this is basically all done in the lead-up to the actual groundbreaking next year, scheduled 2016, of the so-called Star Wars Land, which it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that it's coming, but also kind of hard to believe they took this long. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, I got a question for you two, because you both have gone to Disneyland, right?
Yes.
I'm a Disney World guy.
Okay, but you've gone to Hyperspace Mountain, or Space Mountain, right?
Numerous times.
Okay, now they're talking about making it for a limited time, they say, Hyperspace Mountain. What do you guys think of when you hear that? Because what I recall of the ride, it's all pitch black. And I'm like, I don't know if that would work with hyperspace lines shooting around you all the way through it. And if they did do that, wouldn't that take up a lot of space? Like, I'm trying to envision what Hyperspace Mountain would look like.
Well, they've got in the middle of Space Mountain, if I may, Riley.
Mm-hmm. By all means.
As you know, I go to Disney World quite a bit. In the middle of Space Mountain, there is a big set piece, a space station set piece that you go through and buy with people, you know, animatronic people and that kind of thing. So it's not that it's totally black. And there's projection all over the ceiling. It's actually a little brighter in there than it used to be as well because they've redone it. And there's new sound effects in there and that kind of thing. So what I suspect you're going to get is a storyline. They'll probably drop a few TIE fighters in there. They'll probably have some narration on the new speakers that they've got in there. And I would say it's probably not going to be a massive change, but I think it'll be enough that the likes of you and me will be really happy with it. I'll tell you something else that's interesting. And I don't know if it was a mess up or not, but on their blog, you know, they announce all these things on the blog and then they answer some of the questions that people ask on the blog. And we've been calling it Hyperspace Mountain. That's what the logo says. But one of the bloggers, one of the official Disney bloggers, actually referred to it as Ghost Galaxy.
Oh.
And I haven't seen that anywhere else. And I don't know if she slipped up and actually mentioned the wrong thing or if that's something that they haven't released to the public and weren't supposed to. But it's not in any official release I can find, but she refers to it as Ghost Galaxy.
Interesting.
Okay, I'm looking now. It's a Halloween thing. Okay, that's what it is. Okay.
Okay, I was going to say, maybe it's a reference to the famed ship of Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, she said Space Mountain Ghost Galaxy opens November 16th. Plainly, that's not correct.
Unless she's meaning, I think they're meaning 2016, though, because a lot of the dates were for next year.
Yeah, but I mean, you wouldn't open Ghost Galaxy on November 16th. There would be no reason.
This is true.
Hey, remember that Halloween thing? This is what we're doing for it. And by the way, next March I'll be putting up my Christmas lights.
Yeah,
exactly. For our Christmas, far ahead, we just decided to skip it and slop it. So we're leapfrogging holidays this year.
J.J. Abrams needed more time to work on it. Captain, so the former Captain EO Theater is going to be redubbed the Tomorrowland Theater with clips of the Star Wars films and, of course, the Force Awakens trailer. The Jedi Academy play acting lessons for kids is going to be rebooted in December as, quote, the Trials of the Temple with a new villain from the Star Wars Rebels television series.
Interesting. See also more Rebels characters are going to start showing up as well. In the park, so that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. So I don't know. It's fascinating. I'm excited to see these updates. There's going to be updates to Star Tours with.
Now, Scott, with you being a big Disney guy, I got a question for you. Did you go to Celebration Anaheim by chance?
No, I didn't. It's being in radio. We're actually our market has the ratings twice a year. And Celebration took place during the ratings and I really can't take time off during the ratings. And I couldn't in my mind say justify flying all the way out there for 2 days and then, for a day and a half really and then flying back. So I didn't go. I would love to have gone, but I didn't.
Well, did you happen to see any of the pictures of Hera or Zeb where they had the caricatures where they were like hard plastic heads? They had a couple of them walking around.
Yeah, we took pictures with them.
The question I basically had for you as a Disney guy is, if the caricatures were to show up in the parks, would that be something we would want to see, or would it be something more like the way we see our Disney princesses where they're fully fleshed? You know, basically the difference between, say, Ariel, meeting Ariel in the park versus meeting Mickey in the park. Which do you think would be the better route to go with that, since it's an animated series right now?
It is now, but, you know, there are also other representations of these characters. For example, the front cover of A New Dawn isn't exactly an animated version of it.
That's true.
It's you know, what's his name? Sal Perales, who cosplays as these guys and his family, and they look great. I'd rather see them. I'd rather see them as people without the masks, frankly, and with a makeup job. I think that'd be better. I think it'd be easier to interact with them too. I mean, this isn't Woody and Buzz.
Yeah.
This is real flesh Star Wars characters, and they should be able to transpose into all media because it's all one big continuity now, right?
Well, ideally,
they're saying they're getting rid of the Mickey and Donald and Stormtrooper and Jedi outfits and stuff because of that whole new Star Wars land being so immersive, so in universe. I mean, I get it. I'm kind of bummed. Like, we're planning 2020 to be our first Disney World trip, and it's like, I'm going to miss that boat. That Star Wars Weekends is going to be a totally different experience by the time I get there, and I'm on the fence about that. Like, I'm excited on one hand, and I'm kind of genuinely bummed on the other.
My podcasting buddy, Scott Gardner, one of his favorite things of all time is Jedi Mickey, and I can't see how this is going to crush him. I don't know. I think that's a little overboard. But then again, I have a couple of quibbles with the actual concept of the Star Wars land just being some planet that you've never been to that happens to be in universe. Mm-hmm. I would rather visit. I want to visit Hoth, and I want to visit the swamps of Dagobah, and I want to go to Tatooine and go to Mos Eisley Cantina.
Let's be honest. The announcement for that sounded kind of corporate, where it specifically was talking about, well, we don't want to choose a location that's like tied to a specific movie that might feel dated. We want something that's unique to Disney so that when people go, it's a unique experience.
See, and I think I hear, think you're right.
Oh, so I have to say, what I hear when they say that, is what I hear is, we just want something that's unique to Disney and not something that's necessarily Star Wars.
Yes, and I think they also said, we want Diagon Alley, where you go to one place and you're totally immersed in that one place and that's it. And unfortunately, that Diagon Alley is not Star Wars. And this planet, whatever this planet is not something that's been well chronicled and described like Diagon Alley has been in the movies and books.
Yeah,
exactly. That's a huge
difference.
Well,
it does have an opportunity, though, to provide what you're asking for, because they could. Okay, so the basic concept is like it's a fringe star base on a planet in the far outside reaches kind of thing. The last stop on your frontier. Mm-hmm. But if you had, like, say, like a Department of History kind of thing, where you go in and you enter a holo simulator, and you can walk the Forest of Endor, or go and see the icebergs on Hoth, or something along those nature, like you could do something like that, keep it in universe, keep it themed, and still give you windows into like the prequel trilogy, the original trilogy, and the sequel trilogy.
Riley's not a fan. I want to walk into the cantina and order a beer. That's what I want to do. I want to be able to actually roll through the frozen tundras of Hoth and slice open a tauntaun. Darn it.
And with smell-o-vision, in fact, I would like to see that happen. But yeah, I'm with you. I would rather it be, I understand the point of being immersive and being, and what they want is they want it to be in story. And when you walk into that land, everybody is in character and in story, and everything that's happening is happening around you feel like is in story. And I get that, but at the same time, I think it would be better to give us more of the familiar classic Star Wars. Yeah. And, you know, to say, well, we don't want something that will feel dated. Star Wars is 38 years old. Is it dated?
Well,
38.
Luke Skywalker's hair.
How are you going to do the character angle of it? Okay, like, when you think about Cars Land, Cars Land is probably the closest land in Disneyland and that you have right now that is themed to what it was supposed to be in the films. You know, you're walking around there, you feel like you're walking in the streets of Cars, and you see the characters, they roll out, they do their little character greets, they're like the characters from Cars. what's that going to look like in Star Wars land? You're like, oh, hey, look, there's Chewie with one of his little cast member guys. And what are you doing, Chewie? Oh, you're stopping so all these kids can talk to you. That seems so realistic right now.
Wait a minute. How can Luke be here at 2 o'clock and Jango Fett be in the same spot 2 hours later? How can that be?
Yeah. Yeah. There are these kind of questions because that's where I'm like bummed about the whole world. The characters can't be in costume anymore. I was like, let's not take it too far. It's Disney still. Come on.
Let's have fun.
Magic. You can do anything with magic.
Yes. Yes. I'm with you, Mark.
Do you believe in magic?
Like I hope you do.
Although I will say this.
Grab a lightsaber, have some Dagobah stew.
Although I will be honest, Scott, there's one thing that's still dated, and that's the feathered hair. The feathered hair of one Luke Skywalker.
You don't know that that's not a space hairdo.
This is true.
The dry atmosphere of Tatooine could cause his hair to flop like that. You just never know.
It's so true. will we be seeing Darth Vader in Rogue One, or for that matter, the sequel trilogy? That is the subject of the next news story. That's what I call a hard transition. I was thinking of speaking of feathered hair, but there's nothing. There is nothing.
No, you know, this is one aspect that I'm excited about. I think it's a smart play. I think back to when they put out the Blu-rays and Lucas went back and added scenes to the saga. And the one scene that I always thought they should have added was Vader and Kenobi. They should have extended that scene. It would have been super easy to put anybody in a hood up.
You've been a long time proponent
fighting a guy in a costume dressed as Vader.
Yeah.
You could have made it any bit as intense as it was in episode 3, ratcheted up that action a little bit more to bring it closer to today's standards of action in that regard. But they didn't do that. So I'm kind of like,
you've been a big proponent of Vader action.
This is the chance to make up for that, you know, to really give us what I'm assuming we're going to see of Vader in Rebels. But we really need to see Vader at his pinnacle, like his Freddy Krueger, his Jason moment, like, ah, Lord Vader, run, kind of thing, where you're just, you know, the Dark Lord is here. And when we say the Dark Lord, we mean dark. And that's what I think you could get out of Rogue One. I mean, this seems to be the most gritty Star Wars film we're getting so far. And throwing Vader in might be a brilliant move.
Absolutely. We were just talking about the leaked set pictures on last week's episode. Scott, are you traversing that territory, that spoilery territory?
Oh yeah. I'm listening to you guys. So
okay. So you're on the same page with us then. Rogue One's really kind of kicking into high gear now in the midst of its filming, and the idea of seeing Vader, it would be
I think a couple of things. One, I go back to Mark's suggestion. But, you know, we just had the talk about all the people who insist that we put the original cut of Star Wars out of Blu-ray. What happens now if the next edition of Star Wars that comes out of Blu-ray has Obi-Wan going all Yoda on Darth Vader and the Death Star flipping and flopping around, jumping up, bouncing off the walls? But then you'll see some fanboy nerd outrage.
You better believe it. Like, although even the recut, what is Star Wars Revisited, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, Adiwan's Revisited.
He kind of does some faster edits to where it kind of picks up the pace a bit. And even that's a little awkward because it kind of feels like a cheap MacGyver episode because he reuses a few shots and you see the same lightsabers. you know those shots, like the old Battlestar Galactica episodes.
But you know
the Power Rangers and stuff. Yeah.
when they started production on episode 7, and we had some conversations with some buddies of mine and probably the Dinner for Geeks guys, one of the things I said was Darth Vader will show up in some way. And for him to show up in that trailer, it kind of went, there you go, there he is. And the reason I say that is because, I mean, follow the toy guys. Listen to the toy guys.
Yeah.
Darth Vader is the single most marketable thing about the Star Wars trilogy. Any chance they have to use him, they're going to use him.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why you have a prominent shot of the burnt Vader mask. And that was probably one of the biggest and most viral images of the trailer.
Yep.
But that's not the only Vader rumor that we have. Episode 8 underway right now, filming. Believe it or not, it's hard to believe, but you know, we were just talking to Colm Flynn, Irish reporter, last week, who was there on the ground at Skellig Michael, where Mark Hamill is presumably filming scenes as the one and only Luke Skywalker for Episode 8, and And I'll tell you what, man, here's the quote. This is directly from an anonymous source that Making Star Wars has, so take this for what you will. A team in the UK are soon heading to the US to begin training. That's what I get for highlighting it. Hayden Christensen for Star Wars Episode 8 in an appearance of some sort. Now, what's interesting is, I love the following quote from Jason Ward. I have a hard time thinking they would need Christensen to train for Star Wars if he's simply a ghost. He's still physically fit, and to me, the rumor almost points to more of some sort of resurrection of Darth Vader. Now, I just want to sit back and enjoy the possibility. Prequel fan Riley, who saw The Phantom Menace first and was floored by Qui-Gon Jinn fighting Darth Maul, who absolutely loved The Duel of the Fates, who mm-hmm. even tolerated the clunky dialogue, romantic dialogue in Attack of the Clones because he loved the amazing arena sequence, who absolutely adored the tragedy, the Shakespearean drama of Revenge of the Sith, all of whom were central parts of Riley's Star Wars fandom. That prequel fan Riley is just going to sit back here on this podcast episode and enjoy the possibility, just envisioning people freaking out at Hayden Christensen returning to the world of Star Wars.
Let me add to your epicness here, my man. Aftermath. Spoiler alert, it's itty, it's bitty, it's in a prelude, and it might not even mean anything because of the way they worded it. But this Aftermath spoiler that is so teensy tiny, absolutely nothing to the plot of the thing. I'm going to drop it on you right here and now.
Spoiler alert.
Darth Vader's lightsaber. Not Anakin Skywalker's, but Darth Vader's lightsaber. There is a group of individuals that grab a red lightsaber. They claim it's Darth Vader's. It's never proven in the book. But when they're asked what you're going to do with it, they respond, we're going to destroy it so it can be with the Dark Lord in his afterlife. And yeah. I'm just like, wait, Hayden Christensen where coming back? See, like, see, what are we doing here?
Now my mind's turning. Because there was an article, and now I feel like a terrible human being. I cannot for the life of me remember where I was reading this. But it was in the last week or two. It was on like an IO9 or something like that, where they were speculating of the possibility of the resurrection in some form or fashion of Darth Vader. And they point to that very specific passage of Aftermath.
I can see this.
Let me just say this. I've learned over the years to not doubt Making Star Wars, because they turn out to be right more often than not. And that sometimes that ticks people off, but I think it's funny. And I enjoy their site. The only thing I don't get is the marketing angle on this new film has been so geared towards, please forget the prequels. We apologize for the prequels.
Yes, it is.
Please don't think about the prequels. And then all of a sudden, you're going to bring back one of the things people hated most about the prequels? I don't understand.
I know. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, but what is it that we hated about the prequels in this case that you're referring to, Scott?
Well, a lot of people hated Hayden Christensen as Anakin Skywalker. Hated him. Loathed him.
I'm just going to
Google. And I'm not one of those guys. I mean, understand, I'm one of the old school guys that, you know, I love everything. You know, I'm all in for everything. But, I mean, you got to admit, there are a lot of people who complain about his performance in the prequels. They don't like Hayden Christensen.
Yeah. Okay. And I can't stop those arguments. I thought I was going to be one of those that were upset that he was just brought into the original trilogy at the end. Because I know that there's some people that are upset about that from that angle, and they're thinking it's going to be a Force ghost. But, you know, they do have legends to pick from. And there is an ability called flow walking that was tweaked with, because when it originally was conceived, it was like, whoa, simmer down there, Mr. Denning. We don't want to take this in a direction we don't want to. And then they, for lack of better words, they neutered flow walking and made it where you can only go one direction in the past. But if they decide to take this and run with it, you could have something where they decide to have Anakin kind of do some flow walking, maybe, or something along those lines. Another angle that Legends has taken with is in the netherworld of the Force, as Anakin was dying and being pulled towards the netherworld, Obi-Wan and Yoda's ghost spirits came and grabbed him and pulled him off and were like, oh, we'll redeem you last minute. That was a Legends thing, too, that they could go an angle of that regard as well, that I'm not saying they should go either one of these ways, but I'm saying they could go these ways. And yes, that would be like dropping an A-bomb in a small pond and trying to go back and fish for it later. But I don't know, man. There's so many. It's hard to speculate because my mind goes everywhere.
Yeah. And look, like I said, I won't complain about it. I think it'll be interesting, whatever they want to do. But there are a lot of people that will put off, and it'll be interesting to see. And it may be that episode 7 is so incredibly wonderful that people will buy into anything after that. But I suspect that there are going to be those holdouts who are just going to be bitter.
Yeah. No, I think so. Am I the only one who's waiting for the Hayden Christensen tell-all book? That would be amazing. Can you imagine?
No, because it would all be monotone. It would be written in one, you know, one tone.
I was on the set of Attack of the Clones.
I hate 3PO. He's like sand. He's everywhere. He's gritty and just coarse.
Yeah, after Anthony Daniels' rants lately, I want to hear his tell-all book.
Oh,
or maybe that is his tell-all book.
That would be. Are you kidding? He's telling his tell-all book just to the press right now.
I believe it's called I Hate You All and Good Night.
Anthony, that's a whole nother... That's a whole nother discussion. Anthony, we talked about him 2 weeks ago, and he's still been on the road.
Yeah. Nobody has gotten him and said, just shut up.
You almost have to wonder if people are just getting him liquored up. Like, the comments just sound like they're like after the interview, kind of, you know, just relaxing and chilling with a friend comments and stuff. You know, like his comments about Mark Hamill. It's like, well... Yeah, you could point at how he's older now and he's been through some car wrecks and how it's affected him, but it's really taking all the life out of the man's life, and I don't know. Like,
yeah.
But I could see that being a conversation someone has and then those comments being totally taken out of context and be like, and then he said this, that D-bag.
So here we go. From the Inquisitor. Anthony Daniels, ladies and gentlemen, once again making waves, speaking about his co-stars in a new interview, singling out Mark Hamill as someone who hasn't aged well. Daniel spoke with the Daily Mirror. Okay, let's stop there. That was your first mistake. Anthony Daniels plus Daily Mirror equals bad. Bad PR.
Scandal.
Like many of his co-stars, Daniels returns to his iconic role for the newest film, yet as the interview notes, only he and R2-D2 actor Kenny Baker have appeared in all previous 6 Star Wars installments. While Daniels was technically banned from talking The Force Awakens during the interview, hello, I am C-3PO. No one banned me from talking about how terribly Mark Hamill has aged. Oh my! I thought the first read-through would be a nightmare, but it was gorgeous. It was as though we had just walked off the set of episode 6. So he had some nice things to say.
But then.
Harrison was just brilliant. He made me smile. I'm smiling at the memory. He's 72 but still got the charm, the charisma. He's had some bad times, first his ankle and then the plane, but he's back on good form. You know, Anthony Daniels... I mentioned it before, but we caught him on a good day when we interviewed him for the Star Wars Report at Celebration 6. And he gave us like a 10-minute interview off the cuff, unscheduled, and was very complimentary afterwards. I've told it before on the podcast. One of the greatest moments of my life was describing the interview that he had just conducted, looking me square in the eyes. Anthony Daniels, C-3PO himself, looks at me and says, "That was really, really good." And I was like, "My life is complete. I can die now." but he's not one to mince words, and it's funny because I just think,
well, you know those movies where, okay, I just watched The Duff, and in The Duff, like,
there's this girl that's like the popular girl, and she talks down to everybody. She's passive aggressive, 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 all this, that, and the other thing. And I kind of get that vibe from Daniels. Like, he's the one out of the group that he's aged the best. You know, he's stayed the same shape. You know, like, he still looks young, even though he's covered up under a mask. It never was an issue. He never lost his form. He never had to drop weight to get back into that costume. And so he kind of comes across really cocky because of it all. You know, he's like the alpha of the group in that regard when it comes to the looking down your nose at everyone else kind of thing. I don't know. It just, I think it's get funny, that vibe.
Like, despite all of these... Despite all of these sort of glib quotes referring to The Force Awakens and how he nearly got a hangover reading the script, you still see him in that behind-the-scenes video from Comic-Con just, like, staring around the set in absolute wonder. So I think a lot of it's just Anthony Daniels being Anthony Daniels. but there's that. All right, we do have one final story that I want to bring up before we jump to feedback, and that is also for Making Star Wars. They're at it quite a bit this week. This time it's The Force Awakens and The Final Jedi. Now, of course, we all remember Force Friday when all the toys were released. One particular fascinating quote was from a toy of a Kylo Ren mask, and the quote. Let's see if I can actually get it to load up here. The quote,
"Together, we will destroy the Resistance and the Last Jedi."
See, normally I have to, like, vamp for a few minutes, but then it was just like, bam, it played. I was, like, right in the middle of getting ready to introduce it to have the timing perfect, and it's like, "Together, we will destroy the Resistance and the Last Jedi." Now, of course, does he mean the Last Jedi of the Jedi Order? The Last Jedi of... a specific Jedi order, the last Jedi, as in before the order's renamed. But there was a new tweet from the official Star Wars Twitter in France. In French, it tweets, "Together we will restore the final Jedi." So it refers to somebody being Luke. The final Jedi.
I had also heard, too, like a German translation of it made it clear that it was multiple Jedi. And I was like, wait, what? So it was interesting that just because it's in a different language, it can be interpreted differently. Because, yeah, in English, Jedi could be plural. It could be singular. It wasn't until towards the end of the EU's life that they had made Jedis an official plural as well. Originally, if you use Jedi's, you didn't know your grammar in Star Wars, and people made fun of you.
Let's all still know. We need to all agree that Jedi's is the dumbest way to pronounce the plural of Jedi ever, and it needs to stop.
Hear.
it's omnibus or omnibi, right? I mean, they're just those funny things
the
where
omnibuses.
It's like people will just have their own definitions for it. I mean, you got people saying extended universe when it was always called expanded universe.
Well, that's also wrong.
You're just not going to stop people, man. You just can't fix things.
Oh, no, I'm going to be that guy. Extended, unacceptable. It's expanded. so The Last Jedi, in case there were any doubts, it looks like, if I were to speculate, Luke Skywalker is the last Jedi, which is a really fascinating concept and the way to go, if you ask me.
See, now you're saying it's the way to go, and I'm...
Yes, it is.
I'm upset.
Give it up, Mark.
I'm going to give you why, okay? I will be with you when I'm sitting in the seat like Scott. I'm the same. I will accept what's coming my way. But I am such a fan of Jedi Leia. I think that aside from losing Jaina Solo, losing Jedi Solo is probably one of the angles that really upsets me the most, because when Leia finally set all the politics and all that BS aside during the New Jedi Order and started finally embracing her Jedi heritage and training under Saba Sabantine, that was when she became a badass in her own right. That was a Leia that I absolutely loved. She stepped up in more ways than just with the Force. She became Han's full-time co-pilot. Han had a new relationship within the Jedi Order that was different than what he had always had. He'd always been like the inside man, but now it was like he was like the inside godfather kind of thing. There was just so many angles about what was going on with Leia embracing her Force destiny that if Luke is it, and we know that Leia is alive, that means that she never embraced that. And that's an aspect of that character that I was really looking forward to them doing something different, because in the New Jedi Order, she's 45 at this point by the time she starts her Jedi training. When Legends ends, she's just a Jedi Knight. Her daughter's a master, not Leia. That was always an angle that I thought they really blew in Legends, and I always hoped that they would make that different. The whole comment from Yoda about Luke not being the only one, though, there's another. I mean, I always was hoping that there was a plan to test out the waters and give her some kind of abilities. Now, they could still do that, give her abilities and not make her a Jedi. I'll be okay with that. The thought of that potential being lost is just heart-wrenching for me.
Wait a minute. That's when she became a genuine badass?
Well, that's when I enjoyed her badass.
Was it when she's snatching blaster rifles away from people in the Death Star and ordering around a Wookiee that we know can rip her arms off?
See, that's what made me love her.
Yeah, but I see what you're saying, Mark, and there that contingent of fandom that really wants to see Leia come into her own. And it was very much alluded to in Empire at the end, where she senses Luke for the first time.
I think this is an interesting story angle for one big reason, and that's because, you know, are you guys radio show fans?
A specific radio or generally?
The Star Wars radio show.
The radio dramas.
Love,
yeah, absolutely.
I adore the radio dramas. But one of the things that they make very clear at the end of that, Brian Daly makes very clear at the end of that, is the Return of the Jedi. The title means, according to Brian Daly, that the Jedi Order are returning to the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that didn't happen, or it has been done away with over a 30-year period. So I do find that interesting from a dramatic standpoint, that he's the last of the Jedi, if, in fact, there was an effort to repopulate the Jedi, which I assume there was.
Yeah, yeah. And in that regard, I could be 100% behind you. If Story Group has something planned for that gap, something planned for the why the Jedi did not come back, or why Luke failed at getting them to come back, or if the Jedi Luke trained, they failed. I mean, like, what if like, instead of the Jedi Academy, Luke's first 12 students all went out and died? And he's just like, he pulls the Obi-Wan, like, dude, I blew it. My students all, they fell. I'm a failure. I'm done. The galaxy doesn't need a Jedi anyway. They're good without the Jedi. I'm going to go hide in this hole.
And the ghost of Obi-Wan says, perhaps you need a timeout, Luke.
Luke, if that's an angle, 30, I hope that they really milk up. I mean, I would absolutely love to see some more Force ghosts. It has to be Hayden Christensen. I'm okay with that, but I would love Yoda. I've been dying for the longest time to see Yoda come back, even in Legends, because it was just like, you know, that was supposed to be the I'm more powerful than you could possibly imagine, Vader. Well, but only for a short, limited time, you know, because then my window is going to close. And, you know, if you don't act now, well, then supplies are limited. But I don't know. That was one of those angles. It was like, well, it's supposed to be more powerful than you can possibly imagine. Not for 5 years. I can imagine a lot longer than that, Kenobi. Come on.
Luke, you will go to the Skellig Michael system.
What's funny is that just to toss in this, and again, this is kind of spoiler, well, I don't know, slightly spoilery possible speculation, but if you look at some of the spots that, like, in the local Irish newspapers that they've been reporting that they've been filming at Skellig Michael, there's this, and I forget the name of it, but this ancient carven stone set of staircase that leads up to an ancient monastery that's in ruins, and it is such a cool visual that you would imagine to be perfect if you were going to visit the lair of an exiled crazy Luke Skywalker. It would be so good. So much potential, so much story, so little time. We do have a little bit more of the show remaining. We've got your feedback and a few other notes that we will get to right after this. That's right.
You're listening to the Star Wars Report. Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It's about that time to get into some of your feedback on the Star Wars Report podcast. Scott, when are we doing the 1940s-style radio drama of Star Wars?
I've got to put the script together, but it's something I really want to do, but it's just kind of I can barely crank out a Star Wars story a month at this point, so it's going to be a little while.
Fair enough. Well, rope me in when you do. I want to be involved.
I'll tell you this. I was just cast in our Christmas plays this year. I will be playing grown-up Ralph in A Christmas Story.
Ooh, nice. So, like, how much do we need to bribe you to throw in, like, 3 or 4 off-the-cuff Star Wars references?
I'll have to try and see if I can work that in.
You got to do it and then get us the audio, because that would be amazing, and we will play it.
Okay.
Nothing more festive than Scott Rifen ad-libbing and terrifying everyone on the crew of the local Brunswick.
I would just love if, while you guys are cutting the turkey, you pull the horn. I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
Exactly. Oh, man. We're going to get into feedback, which is brought to you by our repository, 2nd Airborne's Division. A podcast episode archives, which you can find at starwarsreport.com/SWR episodes. We've been talking a lot about the goings-on, previous historical episodes of the Star Wars Report, such as the time we interviewed Anthony Daniels. And that's all in our archive that you can find there, or, of course, go back into the feed of podcasts. So if you're a recent listener, make sure you check out some of the old content as well. It's all up there for you to consume. But let's do it. Feedback. We've got an email from Woo I wanted to highlight. It's a long email. We don't have time for all of it, but I want to get to two sections. The first one being a question. Is it true that the last test in the Jedi Trials is that the Padawan needs to construct their laser sword? A laser sword! I always thought it was weird in The Phantom Menace that Anakin referred to it as a laser sword, as an aside. By using only the Force, because I remember in the Clone Wars short, in the cartoon series before Episode 3 came out, it shows Jedi using the Force only to construct a laser sword. And has the rule been changed, or is it still the same? From Wu S. Kim. We go live reporting on the ground from Brunswick, Georgia. It's the party pooper, Scott Rifen, who says it is not canon anymore.
No, and Wu is a wonderful guy, by the way. Wu and I chat on Facebook from time to time. That version of Clone Wars doesn't exist anymore. It's bereft of life. Stiff.
I mean, you can
it's
find
beat its maker.
So Wu, let me shed some happiness on you. The answer is yes and no. Yes, it exists in canon. No, it does not. It exists only in Legends. It is only in the continuity of Legends. And it was, as Scott mentioned, it was the Gendy Clone Wars that really put that out there, as well as the Dark Horse Comics. They were the ones that talked about that. But even then, that wasn't the last step of the Padawan process, but it was more the last step of the Padawan while they were part of the, before they got a master. When you pick up the Jedi Apprentice series with Ben Kenobi, when he's young Obi-Wan, he has gone and done all that stuff, but he hasn't gone on a mission with his master yet. He hasn't been picked. He might have to go to the AgriCorps and all that stuff. That is all 100% expanded universe. It's Legends. In canon, we don't really know. The closest we have is watching Ahsoka Tano go through her trials. And as we saw, she already had a lightsaber as all that began. So there's definitely a different aspect to it. But in Legends, that was the way it originally was intended. But then once Clone Wars came out, it kept changing that, and they were retconning it to slowly line up with what we were seeing on that show. But now it's its own universe. We have no official canon answer, as Scott put it.
This is true, although we do have a variation on the answer, and that is we know that people can cobble them together very poorly now if they want to themselves, as evidenced by Kylo Ren. And Scott, I want to counter yes, no longer in canon, but it does exist on eBay for $1.50. You can buy Clone Wars Volume 1. Well, $8 shipping too. But yeah, you can buy Volume 1. Volume 2 is a mere starting bid of $2 for Volume 2 of the Gendy series. Wasn't there a time when they were super rare and expensive or something? Like there's a high demand?
I don't know. I feel bad when I see stuff like that. I've got a buddy who is a science fiction author, a Nebula Award-winning science fiction author, lives here. You know, he's one of the bigger guys in the field today. Every so often I'll see one of his books in a remainders pile, and I feel bad. So I always buy them out of the remainders pile so they don't sit there.
Nice. Nice.
It is one of those things. I'll never forget my first exposure to the Gendy series was in a little cheap DVD that they packed together with the $20 version of the light-up Hasbro lightsabers from the Revenge of the Sith series.
Nice.
And I bought an Anakin Skywalker and an Obi-Wan one, and they packed this little kind of cheap dollar DVD where they had a few of the shorts, and they cut together a mini documentary out of the episode one and episode two. So there's like the web short for episode two that they did on lightsabers. This weapon is your life, if you remember that.
Yes, I remember the fake beard.
Exactly. And they had
that's the
that.
Only thing that just keeps jumping out every time I see that scene. Look at that beard!
Now, in high definition, buy the Star Wars Saga on Blu-ray and see Obi-Wan's fake beard in its glory.
Well, what's so tragic is when he grew it out, it was such a glorious beard. It was oh, man.
The Revenge of the Sith
can
beard.
Can we dub his face back in on that other one? Because that's just, it's bringing me out of the reality, man. I can see the glue.
It's so true. But yeah, they cut together, they put together this intercut documentary that they did the sections of the giant hour-long Phantom Menace one. And there was, and I remember watching that over and over again as a kid. I didn't even know the Gendy series had existed because this is about a year after Revenge of the Sith came out. And I'll never forget it, that being my first exposure. Also, side note, that episode one documentary, I want to say isn't there an F-bomb that Ewan dropped somewhere in the middle of it?
Possibly.
I swear there is. I swear on the VHS edition of The Phantom Menace that runs that documentary afterwards, I know there's a version that does it, that Ewan drops an F-bomb like halfway through, and
you know,
14-year-old me was in shock.
That springs something up to mind, though, about the whole theatrical version on Blu-ray, though, is when you have in Return of the Jedi, Ulla, she had the
that's true.
The little slip.
Yeah,
and
the
that's
wardrobe
the scene that
malfunction.
I can't see them putting back in.
Yeah,
that's the scene
true.
I can't unsee.
This is so true. Okay, part two. Back to Woo's email. He says, Luke has his popular green laser sword, and I've read that the green ones convey a slightly darker attitude than the blue lightsabers, since Luke's attitude is slightly darker for the majority of episode six, which I would say is a fair characterization. He goes on to say, does change a little bit at the end of the film, but do you guys think in episode seven, Luke would have a blue laser sword?
See, when it comes to the darker color and the attitude and stuff like that, I don't buy that one, because if that was true, I think Anakin should have had one in episode three, and he had the blue one. There are a lot of places, especially on Facebook, where they give you questions and they assign you a color and they say that it goes along those lines. Legends, in the KOTOR era and stuff, they assigned colors in that regard. The Guardians were yellow, you know, and each one had a different color. Protectors, I believe, were blue. Consulars were green, of those nature. And it did matter more in Legends in that era than it did any other time. But beyond that, it just became more of a quest. I know another aspect of Legends was Luke created an artificial lightsaber crystal in his green blade, which was also something different than the Jedi did, because typically the Sith were the ones that created artificial crystals, and the Jedi went and harvested theirs from actual natural places like the cave on Illo and things of that nature. But those, again, are Legends. I mean, that's the one cool thing about April 2014 is we're in a whole new world where anything's possible with canon.
Absolutely, yep. Man. Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, that's why Mark was the one who should answer that question, because you got me. That's why we keep Mark around. Absolute pleasure, gentlemen. That's going to bring this episode of the Star Wars Report to a close. Aww. Hey, it's okay. We've got super cheerful closing music for the episode, for the podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Star Wars Report podcast. You have been listening to episode 186 as we tread ever closer, dangerously close, to 200 episodes of this fine podcast. Make sure you leave us an iTunes review if you enjoy the program. And of course, if you want to really support the show, help us upgrade some equipment, make sure that you are supporting the show. And it's very easy. Just go to patreon.com/StarWarsReport. That's patreon.com/StarWarsReport to support the show and get things like, I don't know, the audio of me interviewing freaking Chewbacca for an hour.
Yes.
You can do that. Like Scott Rifen is, and we greatly appreciate your support, sir.
That's right, yeah.
Absolutely. Also, check out the 602 Club appearance and make sure that you're checking out that podcast for A New Hope. It's their most recent episode as you're hearing this on the podcast. And if you're not checking out that Mentor special film, you should be. What's wrong with you? Stay tuned next week. Jimmy Mack comes on to set the record straight on all the lies and deception about the Chicago Tribune article. Something like that. If you want to contact us, here's what you want to do. You want to email us like Woo did. It's StarWarsReport@gmail.com. Facebook.com/StarWarsReport is where you want to join the Facebook community of folks. We're always posting fun stuff there. And, of course, join more than 15,000 Star Wars fans that follow us on Twitter. It's @StarWarsReport. And once again, don't forget that iTunes review. It really helps the show. We really need some new positive reviews. So if you enjoy the show here and you like what you hear, let us know on iTunes. Go to StarWarsReport.com/iTunes, and it takes you straight to the store there. Or if you're listening to us in the podcast app, the Apple podcast app, you can review us right there. So, again, stay tuned next week. We got a lot of great stuff. You want to follow Scott Rifen. Where can folks find you?
Oh, I'm all over the place. I'm at Rifen, R-Y-F-U-N, on Facebook, at My Star Wars Story, at Dinner for Geeks, everywhere. Which
Absolutely.
Is why I can't ever get a podcast done.
He's so busy podcasting.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and, you know, speaking of which, My Star Wars Story, if you're not listening, you should, especially the next episode, as you're listening to this podcast very soon, will be the release of Riley's appearance on the show. So listen to My Star Wars Story, and that's what, to actually get it, it's like My Star Wars Stories. It's great. It's great. Take a listen to it, and make sure you're subscribed to that podcast as well. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat. That's right, I'm getting all hip, Scott. It's user the Riley guy.
You young people.
And of course, Mark is on the social media. Illogical Rogue 2 is what you want to find on Twitter, and of course, you can find us on Facebook under our actual real names. That's good.
And even on Star Wars phone apps.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, folks, thanks so much for your support and for listening each and every week to the Star Wars Report podcast. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Look out, Carefree! It's going to shoot you!
Woo! All right. Another one bites the dust. Bitter dirt.
Yeah.
Dirt.
Oh, poor Bothan.
Another one bites the dust.
Oh,
15 minutes till the big moon thing, too. So.
Oh, yeah.